What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's at ImmacSports.
Instagram is also at ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 214. We are in the championship series for baseball playoffs. As of right now, we got game two of the Yanks and the Guards. I believe in Stephen Vogt, but things might slip away pretty quickly from them. We'll get into all the other teams that were recently eliminated, our usual football talk, but a little twist on that. And of course, what an awesome week of college football.
Yeah, of course. I'll let you go ahead and get into your opener here in a sec, but obviously we had a lot of things to talk about this week, especially with our two teams, the games that were played, and maybe some of the things that happened off the field between the two teams might be a bit more interesting as well, too. We'll talk college football, who's in year 12. Skyler's got a mock draft for us, I think, which will be cool. We'll talk quarterback play from this season specifically, but I'll let you go ahead and get into that college football week seven that we saw this past week.
Yeah, so this week was one of those weeks that was bookmarked by everyone to not have your wedding during because of the amount of ranked matchups, and they all delivered. So many overtime games, right? Tennessee escapes Florida. They stay alive in the playoff. LSU and Ole Miss was a classic, like they always have. That Oregon and Ohio State game definitely lived up to the hype that was surrounding that one. Oregon moving on, and even Colorado giving K-State a little scare in the night game. What a wild season it's already been, and a great way to introduce that 12-team playoff that we'll get into in about 45 minutes from now.
Yeah, that's a good time estimate. We'll come back to see how long that actually does take. But for my opener, in a week that didn't have a lot of, I'd say, fruitful performances from my teams, I think the biggest thing that I saw was just the continued dominance from Brock Bowers. And another good game that he had on Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He now leads tight ends in the NFL in receptions and yards. Bit off on the touchdowns, but that's something he can work on once we, you know, get some other pieces around him. But this guy's proven already in his first six games of his NFL career that he's an all-pro level talent at the tight end position. And he's, you know, trending that way to be, you know, either first or second team all-pro at the tight end position this year. And with the Raiders team that has so much turmoil going on that we will get into in a few minutes here, Brock Bowers being a bright spot is not something that's really talked about too much with this team and just how good he's been. He's definitely going to be, you know, the main attraction for whatever quarterback we do end up getting, whether it's next year or whenever it happens. He's going to have Brock Bowers as his number one guy, I'd imagine. And that kind of even got even more solidified with what we saw today. And I guess that can lead me right into the biggest trade of the three trades that we saw on the NFL today, and involved our two teams, with Davante Adams going to the Jets. This has been something that's, you know, been rumored ever since Rodgers went to the Jets a couple of years ago. After Devontae's first year, it wasn't like he was like considered unhappy, but there's just always been that rumor around him, him being traded, that happened this last few years in Green Bay. And right after his first year in Las Vegas, he kind of got started those same rumors to pop up. Obviously, it ended up happening today. I woke up to the news. I assume you woke up to the news as well, too. I'll let you go ahead and break it down first and kind of what this means for your team, and then maybe some reflection on that on my part as well.
Yeah, definitely a little more complicated on the Jets side of things than the Raiders as of right now. Last night, I was doing some reflecting on past Jets teams as I watched a condensed version of the Monday night game after I got home from work, because this felt like the first official, unofficial moment of, oh, man, we may have shot ourselves in the foot with this one. Three-game losing streak. The game looked pretty unwatchable last night, very similar to the Jets-Bills games of the past 10 years. Horrific refs. And, you know, I'm not a blame the refs guy. We lost because we missed two field goals and we had dumb penalties against a very good team. But when you have a crew like this, it can really fuck up the flow of the game for both teams. So I decided last night that I wasn't going to ask for the Super Bowl from Rodgers anymore, that I could be happy with just watching a team that scores more than 13 points in a game. So, of course, this morning it was hard to not be happy with the Devontae addition. Getting to watch two Hall of Famers work together for the next, hopefully, two seasons. You never know what happens, especially with the contract. I just wish they could have done this 3 weeks ago instead, because 2-4 is a pretty big hole to climb out of. I guess he really was hurt with the hamstring. Luckily for us, there's some other teams, the Dolphins, Raiders, Bengals, Colts, who have their own massive issues. So it's probably going to come down to the end of the season, per usual, Buffalo and Miami, and then they'll be the ones to rip our hearts out. Because an underrated deficit of this team is the defense, once again demolished by injuries, and it's not going to be that top three group that we thought it was going to be. So we can't really be calling for a Super Bowl right now. But I'm going to try to cherish every time Rodgers throws it to Devontae, because I know how special those guys are.
Yeah. Before we get into my analysis, this is kind of something that I was envisioning. I don't know if you were in the conversation yesterday, but we were talking about Devontae being traded before it happened. And I said, either the Jets win on Monday night and it doesn't happen, or the Jets lose on Monday night and they trade for Devontae at like 2 a.m. the next day. They trade for him immediately after they lose. And that's kind of what we saw happen. Devontae had the red eye to New York last night. So before they even trade, got public, like, this was happening. And I'm sure somebody was on that plane or like, is that Devontae Adams, or something like that. So, I'm surprised it didn't get leaked at all or anything like that, but with that going on. But regardless, from the Raiders' perspective, first I'll talk about it sucks. Of course, you lose a guy like that, but I've always kind of been on the idea that guy doesn't want to play for you, then just get him off the team. And I'm happy that we were at least able to get something for him. While it sucks, it is, third rounder, and it'll probably stay as a third rounder with some of the crazy conditional values to it if to go up to a second round pick. But I'm happy we got something for him. And I'm happy we can kind of just turn the page on this. This isn't going to be something that we're going to have to deal with. And it's something that's just been talked about so much. And I assume has to be a big distraction for the players as well, too, the coaches, not really his ego, but just the ego that surrounds a guy like that. And hopefully we can build in the correct way from this. Now we go draft a QB, we go build the weapons around him from, guys playing with him, and not just, throwing in a superstar and then getting rid of the QB that he wanted to play with. But regardless, it does suck. So there is that. I understand we're going to be bad this year. That's something that I want. I'm going into these games not wanting us to lose. I don't want us to pull the Raiders and, start off 2-9 and then win 3 games in a row. And then like, oh, we have a chance or something like that. And the next thing you know, you lose them. Next couple of games, but you don't have the first pick anymore. You have the 15th pick. That'd be the worst case scenario. On the Jets side of it, it's a great addition, but I think you can kind of agree with me as well too on this. Maybe perhaps that the Jets weren't a Devontae Adams away from winning the Super Bowl, and I think that's something that you understand, but maybe not a ton of people. There's good and bad fans on both sides of this stuff, but. Regardless, I feel like some people feel like this is like an end-all, fix-all with Devontae going to the Jets, but it's not. Ray Davis had 97 yards on the ground yesterday. Ty Johnson had 30-plus yards as well, too. Like, there's a big issue in the run game, and that's something that you have to stop if you want to be a really good team. And while the Jets have the pieces to get it done, it's just not clicking right now. And maybe that'll be something that we see over the course of the next few weeks, that it fixes itself out, or maybe the offense becomes so good that you don't really have to worry about the run game. But we know when we watch January, February, even late December football, that you have to be able to stop the run to win games. And especially against big teams in the AFC like the Ravens, you have to stop the run. And it's not going to be Ray Davis and Ty Johnson back there. It's Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. So I think there's definitely bigger fish to fry right now for the Jets, and rather just getting a good receiver, and Devontae will do that. But I think there's going to be some bright spots to this as well, too, of course. Obviously, kind of polishes the offense a bit more. Rodgers, who, in my opinion, already had, good amount of weapons to work with, now gets his favorite weapon of his entire career. I'm interested to see how Garrett Wilson and all those guys react to it, but that's still yet to be seen. It's all speculation as of, day zero right now. We also got another trade in the NFL that happened. It was Amari Cooper going over to the Bills from the Browns. Browns season, I would say, is over, but it's definitely trending that way with kind of just their QB situation in general. Maybe their defense not playing as good as what they expected this year. But this Bills offense that they just added a guy in Amari Cooper who's been traded multiple times now, what do you think that brings in for their team?
It's really a great fit in Buffalo. That's why I felt like we had to talk about this one too, because they're very similar players. And Devontae Adams, he's the possession first guy right now at this stage in his career. It's perfect for scramble drills. We saw Josh Allen do a whole lot of that last night. And I don't think Buffalo is going to have to worry about the Jets or the Dolphins coming for them for a while with the move like this.
Yeah, this is a big move for the Bills. And I think, you know, while he doesn't have that chemistry of Josh Allen quite yet, if once we get to the end of the season, this could be something that really plays well for Josh Allen and Amari Cooper. They're both very dynamic in the way that they play as well, too. Coop's not, like, I would say specifically good at one or great at one specific trait of being a wide receiver, but he's just really good at kind of just doing everything. And I think that's a guy that helps the Bills probably the most at this point, because they have speed, they have physical guys like Curtis Samuel, but now they have a guy that can kind of do it all and that can kind of just sneak past them guys at some time. So obviously it helps to have Josh Allen as well too. If there's Aiden O'Connell thrown to him, I don't think we'd be saying the same stuff, but this move for the Bills is definitely going to help them. And winning last night perhaps even helped them more than, you know, what this trade might bring them. So that's where we are for that. 11 minutes in. Yep. We'll go to the player, pitcher, rookie of the week in the MLB now. Scott, you started off. Who's your player of the week?
I got to go with Frankie Lindor. Two massive homers this week for the Mets. One was a grand slam in the clincher against Philly, and another to kickstart game two in LA for them. He's been the most valuable player in the league over the past month or so, I think. Unless talking about a Shohei game where he beat the Padres one time all by himself, but just overall.
Yeah. I decided to not go with Lindor, even though he had a great week and obviously had probably the biggest moment of this past week. I went with Giancarlo Stanton, though, for his insane week that he had and the resurgence that we've seen from him just in this playoffs, you know, particularly. It's been really cool to see. 6-for-11 this past week, 2 doubles, 2 homers, 4 RBIs, 2 walks, no strikeouts, and a stolen base in there as well, too. He's been better than Judge. That's not something we expected to see happening going into October, but it's definitely cool to see, I would say, the MVP state of Giancarlo being here again, because it's just, he doesn't have that same aura, so to speak. But he's definitely been fun to watch. And when Giancarlo gets going, he's just an electric hitter to watch at the plate.
Yeah.
On a pitcher of the week,
I'm going to go with Jay Flair, the Dodgers, completely shutting down the Mets in game one. 7 innings, 6 Ks. He keeps that scoreless streak alive up until they, you know, no longer. But just crazy. What was it? The 1969 Orioles had the longest postseason scoreless streak. Shout out Jay Flair. They need starting pitching. He's been awesome.
Yeah, Jay Flair definitely played the biggest role in that scoreless ending streak for his 7 shutout innings that he had in that start. 6 Ks, no runs, of course, 2 hits, only 2 walks. Well, he was dominant. Dodgers needed him to be dominant. That's why they traded for him. And I think that's one of the big reasons why that they're still in the playoffs, is because they decided to push their chips in the middle. Unlike some of the teams that we'll talk about in a little bit for these eliminated playoff teams. Moving on to Rookie of the Week, there's not a ton of rookies that still have a ton of contributions in the playoffs, but there is a few. So there's still going to be a Rookie of the Week. Scott, who do you choose here?
Yeah, I have co-winners actually this week, because not only did Yoshinobu Yamamoto look his best so far, arguably of his entire major league career, in that deciding Game 5 win over San Diego, but we have Brian Rocchio, too. He's been great all season with the elite defense. Now he's hitting .421 in these playoffs. If they're going to take down the big, giant New York Yankees, they're going to need everyone to step up, and he's doing his part.
Yeah. I decided to go with Yamamoto as my pitcher, or rookie of the week, that is. like you said, probably the biggest start of his American baseball career so far. I mean, I guess you can make a case for a start that he had in April where he went 7 innings and 11 Ks or whatever it was been. But to do this in October, yeah. 5 shutout, when he kind of was getting, I would say harassed, but a lot of people were talking shit about him, specifically his performance against the Padres in Korea earlier this year. He was great in game five, and he was, you know, reason why the Padres didn't score in the first 5 innings, and that kind of just carried the weight into the later innings of that ball game as well, too. So Yoshinobu Yamamoto definitely gets Rookie of the Week honors here. Moving on to the NFL side of the player, defensive player and Rookie of the Week together, who'd you choose for the player of the week?
I gave it to Sean Tucker, my guy from Syracuse. The Tampa Bay backup was unreal in New Orleans this Sunday. I understand they were big favorites, but Baker did not have a good game in this one. He started chucking it at the end to Chris Godwin, and the numbers look a little better. I think he actually may have led the league in passing yards this week, but 192 total and 2 touchdowns for Sean Tucker as a third stringer in this league is amazing.
Yeah, Sean Tucker definitely stepped up in his role. Still was probably considered the backup in this game. I think the carries between him and Bucky were split evenly at 14. But in those 14 carries, Sean Tucker definitely did more with his opportunity. 136 rushing yards, a rushing touchdown, and then 3 catches and 56 receiving yards with a touchdown through the air as well, too. Just a really dynamic day from him. And I forget exactly who was asking me this, but they're talking about, oh, why did Sean Tucker do so good, or why did he have so many yards? I'm like, he made the most of his opportunities. Mm-hmm. And usually we don't see that too often from the guys that kind of just like randomly get thrown into a role like this. But he was really good. I'm not sure how much he's going to play in the future with Rashad White coming back, but definitely a something to look out for Rashad White doesn't play in future weeks, or Bucky Irvin goes down, that Sean Tucker might be a guy that they decide to give the ball more to.
Cowboys should make a call.
On to, yeah, they probably should. On to defensive player of the week.
I'm going to go with Will Anderson of the Texans because he terrorized Drake May in his first career start with 3 sacks. A lot of guys took the ball away again in different ways, but Will Anderson Jr., he's really starting to make that next jump as an elite pass rusher. And he's going to join the group pretty soon here. Awesome game.
My defensive player of the week is going to be Brian Branch for his role in the Lions' complete rout of the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. He had a forced fumble, also had 2 interceptions and 6 total tackles. Just a big day by the safety that we've seen. Has been an impact player whenever he's been healthy in his career. On to Rookie of the Week.
I'm sticking with Caleb Williams. It wasn't perfect in London, but rookies aren't supposed to be perfect, and they're not supposed to look like him either. Still, 4 touchdowns to only 1 interception in Jacksonville. He's really starting to figure it out. I don't care that it's Jacksonville because rookies aren't supposed to do this, right?
Yeah. And Caleb Williams is going to be my Rookie of the Week as well, too. 23 for 29, 226, 4 touchdowns and an interception. I saw a video talking about how CJ Stroud's rookie year has kind of just ruined the idea of how rookie quarterbacks should play, because before CJ Stroud, the best rookie quarterback season that we saw was Justin Herbert. And Herbert, like, I mean, yeah, he was good for a rookie, but it wasn't that good of a, you know, just quarterback season in general. Now we're seeing, I mean, Caleb's been really good, but Jaden Daniels has been even better. And just the stuff that we've seen from those two guys specifically maybe isn't being talked about enough, especially in the case for Caleb. I think Jaden Daniels is definitely getting his respect, but Caleb, you know, just immediately not becoming a top 5 QB in the league was like, oh, he's a bust or whatever it may be. He's really damn good. And while he might not be a top 5 QB, he's definitely going to get there at some point in his career. He's probably going to throw for 30 touchdowns this year or next year. And when he does, he's going to be, you know, one of the first, or if not the first, Bears quarterback to ever do it. So, already on pace to be the best Bears quarterback of all time, which is funny. Moving on from our NFL awards there, we're going to get into team grades for eliminated playoff teams and top wish list items. There's 8 teams for here. It's going to be the Brewers, the Astros, the Orioles, the Braves, the Phillies, the Tigers, the Royals, and the Padres. We'll get started with off with Milwaukee. What's your season grade for them, and what's the biggest need or top wish list item?
I gave Milwaukee an A. It's really unfortunate that they ran into the hottest team in baseball, because they looked like they could finally get over that hump. They had 93 wins, way above their projected total. And at the top of their wish list is probably another starter. But also, if Willie Adames is gone, you got some major problems there, too. Those are the two spots I would look.
Yeah, I give Milwaukee an A. 93-69 season. They lost their best player in Corbin Burnes and got better. They also navigated injuries on the both sides of the ball, especially with Christian Yelich missing a good portion of the season. Losing a Willie Adames this offseason is probably going to suck, because I don't think they're going to have the money to pay him. So like you said, shortstop is definitely something to consider, but I think they have a good enough farm system to, let's say, replace.
Teach someone how to play it.
Put someone in his role for a little bit, whether that's Terang. I feel like he's probably going to stay at second base just with how good he is at second base, but he's definitely who has the ability to play shortstop. But the top of the wish list is got to be a frontline starter. How they get that frontline starter, I'm not exactly too sure, because I don't think Milwaukee's got the money to be paying, you know, Corbin Burnes, I guess, is technically the top guy to get him back to Milwaukee. But they got to find a way to get a guy. And that could be via trade. Maybe, you know, they send a package over to the Mariners and go ahead and get a Kirby, maybe not Gilbert, but maybe a Brian Wu or something like that. And I think that could maybe be a possible suitor for that, with some of the stuff that Milwaukee has on their side that can help the Mariners team. But still a really good season for the Brewers. And I think it's a lot better. We expected it to be good, but it was a lot better than what we were both expecting.
Yeah.
On to Houston.
I'm going to give the Astros a B-, because they had every opportunity to run this division. The Rangers were basically irrelevant early on, and they didn't. They need a brand new lineup. They just don't look the same, other than a few guys like Yordan Alvarez, who will still be there. Kyle Tucker, I don't remember how many more years. But the big story is Bregman is out of there. They need to score more runs. As long as Altuve is there, you have to go on another run. So they're going to try to find some bats. And they're probably not going to be afraid to spend, knowing that this regime is about done.
Yeah. I'm also giving it a B-, 88-73 season. They did play 161. That's true, because they were going to play the Guardians on the last day of the season. They both didn't need it, so they just canceled the game because it was raining. But 88-73 season might have been a failure when you look at it from start to end. But what they did in the second half of the season, I think, deserves to bump up the grade a little bit, because they were kind of out of it, and then they weren't out of it and ended up winning the division again. But the reality that this team is facing is that it's getting old and the contracts are approaching. Framber Valdez and Kyle Tucker are going to be free agents after next season. And those are going to be two guys that demand a ton of money, especially Kyle Tucker. We could see him getting paid $300-$500 million. Framber, definitely not that much, but still definitely a good chunk of money. So I say the top of the wish list, because I definitely think that they're still going to try to compete for this next year. I don't think they're going to be a team that, you know, looks to sell off Tucker and Valdez in the offseason or something like that. I think the biggest issue for them to attack is having a serviceable middle rotation. I think we've seen that Verlander's kind of not the guy anymore. I think they've ID'd Hunter Brown as a great starter. But maybe that 3 and 4 spots, when Javier, Garcia, McCullers are consistently getting hurt, maybe you shouldn't be relying on those guys anymore and go find some other guys to go ahead and step into that spot, Kikuchi being one of them. But I think that's the biggest wish list item for the Astros right now for me. On the Baltimore,
I'm going to give them a B+. I think they just got cold at the wrong time, because Baltimore has most of the pieces already there. Just some more guys need to get some more at-bats. So I'm pretty sure they're also going to be interested in the ace market this winter, especially if Corbin Burnes decides not to stay there, because I'm hitting the open market if I'm him. So I'm mainly looking at the ace market.
I give it a C-. Baltimore. 91-71 is a good chunk of games worse than what it was last year, and they kind of fell apart in the second half. I know they dealt with injuries specifically with Grayson Rodriguez, Kyle Bradish, and Jordan Westberg. But Atley, a really bad second half. Gunnar Henderson didn't have the second half we were expecting. Even guys like Santander and some of the other guys around the team didn't have maybe the second half of the season that we were expecting based off of how they played in the first half. And the biggest question for me is just how do you compete with the Yankees long term? Because the Yankees are going to be around. They'll probably get Soto back, or if they don't, they're going to spend money to, you know, try to replace him. And while talent is still coming up through the pipeline for Baltimore, I just don't think this team gets there unless they do what I have at the top of the wish list, and that's invest in the team for once. Whether that's re-signing Corbin, whether that's extending Gunnar Henderson, you have to put money in this team if you expect to or want to expect to win a World Series ring, because as much as I like it and as much as I enjoy the players on that team, I just don't think it's going to be enough to win a World Series unless you do supplement these guys with some other pieces. On to Atlanta. Their crazy season, Skyler, what do you have for them?
Yeah, here's my harshest one. Instead of Baltimore, I decided to give this one to Atlanta because they kind of have gold standards set already from many years ago. And they were close, but not close enough to do any real damage. That's why I had the harsher C grade. If Max Fried goes to the Dodgers, that's going to be a problem. But I think at the top of the wish list is just a healthy season from Ronald Acuna. We've seen what the superstars have been able to do for the past 3 weeks in the postseason.
Yeah. I give Atlanta a B. Surprisingly, the record wasn't that good, only 89-73. But they dealt with the injury bug to the fullest extent that you possibly can. Acuna, Strider, Albies, Riley, and Murphy were all out a good piece of the year. So I think I'm more willing to give them a pass than some of the other teams on this list. Top of the wish list item for me is to find a long-term plan at shortstop. I don't like Arcia as a long-term guy. And I think every good team needs to have a good shortstop in place, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Because that's just kind of your heart of your team in that case. But I don't know exactly how they do that because the free agent market isn't that great except for Willy Adames, and I don't know if they're going to be willing to spend that kind of money right now. But they need to identify a guy that they want at shortstop long term, whether that's a young guy, whether that's a free agent or a guy to trade for. I'm not sure. But they got to do it because I do like their pitching. I do like their lineup long term. With most of these guys being locked up through like 20, 35 or whatever it may be. I just think the shortstop's probably the weakest link on the team right now. On to their divisional foe, the Philadelphia Phillies. They got one round past the Braves. So on to the divisional series losers.
I got Philly at a B-. It was really tough to grade them because they dominated for a stretch there. In the second half, too. And that's why I picked them to go to the World Series. But they didn't have it this year. I think they're going to look really long and hard at Anthony Santander. I think he fits the philosophy there. Harper's at first now. Hayes and Rojas weren't great. Castellanos can't play 162. This was the biggest thing I saw when I looked at this team.
Maybe a bit harsh on my grade here. But I give them an F. 93-67 is good. Regular season record, it's the best regular season record that we've seen for them during the stretch. But did you really work all that hard to not play in the wild card round to lose to the Mets, the little brother Mets that Philly's kind of deemed over the last few years? And I think they did it to themselves. They just failed at the deadline miserably. And we're seeing, for example, the Dodgers, why they're not out of the playoffs right now is because they went for it at the deadline. They got Tommy Edman. They got Jack Flaherty. They got Michael Kopech. And the Phillies just didn't get anyone that really meant anything to them. The guy that they got, Carlos Estevez, what did he do? Gave up the home run to Lindor.
Yeah.
So how do you really, blame it on anything else but yourself when your team was healthy? You had all four of your starters. Your lineup was healthy. You had every single one of your guys, and you just lost because of your own volition. And I think that's the biggest part for me, that it wasn't by outside powers, just by yourself that is why you lost. Next stage for this team is I'm beginning to think that this they missed their prime with these guys. I think their window, while it kind of got open out of nowhere in that 2022 season and them making the World Series, is kind of a shock. And it really felt like they had a good chance to beat the Astros that year, and losing that series, I think, maybe hurt a lot. But when you look at the age of their players, Wheeler's 34, Nola's 31, Schwarber's 31, Turner's 31, Harper's 32, Castellanos is 32, and Real Muto's 33. These guys aren't getting younger, and they're probably not getting better either, is I think the toughest pill to swallow for this team. And while they're going to be there for, you know, a couple more years, and you can make it, you know, a case that they could just run it back and, you know, just have a crazy run in October or next couple of years, it's getting harder and harder every single year to do that once you, you know, fail in October once. You fail in October twice. You fail in October the third time in a row. And the biggest way to combat that, I think, is you make a splash. You realize, if you're Dave Dombrowski, that this team isn't going to win you a World Series. So you need to bring someone else in, probably a middle of the order bat, which would have to be good, be in the middle or middle of this team's order to play. And that could be a Bregman. That could be, I think Bregman works actually really well. That's the first time I thought about that, especially with the narrative around Alec Boehm. You could trade him and kind of just be rid of that. But you got to do it, because I think you have to acknowledge that this team isn't enough. And I think kind of these players are starting to have that same feeling as well, too, that we're not enough with what we got right now. So it's an F for Philly. Sorry. World Series or bust. On to Detroit, which is not an F.
Yeah, kind of the complete opposite here. And even though I didn't give Philly the F, Detroit gets an A. They would have loved to have Flaherty on this team in the playoff run for them, but they really need some more established bats in the lineup just as bad. They should be in the rental market again, just in case things go south, but there's a lot of platoon opportunities out there. We had, I don't know, three episodes ago, we went through like the top 20 free agent bats. That those are all in the range for Detroit. Just off the top of my head, grab yourself a Jock Peterson, so it's not injured Carpenter every time, right?
Yeah.
So something like that.
I gave Detroit an A+. This season was the top note I have for them, 86 and 76, by the way, is this more than you could have ever asked with this team? And I think it's exactly that. Whether you go from preseason standards to what it was in the middle of the season, it just got better and better. The lineup for me, I feel like will continue to get stronger as these guys get older. I think Torque started to figure it out a little bit. Riley Green feels like a great piece. Kerry Carpenter, whether he's a, you know, Jock Peterson type player or not, I think he's a very good bat against right-handed pitchers. I think there's a ton of guys in this lineup that could be decent. I just, like you said, being great with some of those guys could be kind of tough. And that's why I think it does matter to definitely attack some of the more platoon-esque guys. And I think just let AJ Hinch do his job, get Javi Baez out of there, but just go ahead and understand that this team probably isn't going to pay a Juan Soto or something like that, but you have the ability to, you know, get Jock Peterson or get a Randall Grichuk or get guys like that that can just make this lineup feel so much more complete, so to speak. But the biggest wish list item for me is that you just can't put so much faith into your bullpen if you want to win this World Series. You can't have one starter, and I know, you know, Reese Olson and maybe some of these other guys are kind of viewed as starters long term, but you can't have one starter in your rotation, and you can't rely on your bullpen that much because somebody's going to fuck up. And that's why they lost the game. Ironically, it was Tarik Skubal, the guy who gave up the runs in Game 5, but you're asking so much of him already that I think it's reasonable for him. He already had three great starts in the playoffs. So the top of the wish list item for me is to ID starters other than Tarik. And that could be guys within your organization right now or outside of it. I think Jackson Jobe, as you know, is definitely a guy who's, I hope they plan to use as a starter. I think Ty Madden's kind of got that same vibe around him. Reese Olson and maybe Bo Brisky or something like that as well too. But you just need other guys. You can't have a one-man rotation. I don't think any team's ever won with that except for maybe the three-man rotations in like the 1870s, but those guys were pitching every inning of every game, so it didn't really matter then.
I like regardless, some options.
yeah, a great season for Detroit, and it's definitely one that's going to go down in Detroit Tigers history for a long time. On to Kansas City, same record as Detroit.
Yeah, a lot of similarities here. I'm going to give them the slightly worse B+, because I felt like you could start to see the wheels spinning off as soon as they got swept by San Francisco at the end of the regular season. But hey, they still managed to win that playoff series. You just got to get some more help for Bobby Witt. I could see him selling high on some veterans, rebuilding the lineup through trade, because, you know, Salvador Perez is not going to do this again, most likely. I know we say this every year, but there's a lot of instances like that on this team where you just might have to wheel and deal a little bit to free up some money.
Yeah, I'll start it off. I'm giving the season an A, 86-76. I was talking about this team prior to the year, how I thought they did a great job of bringing guys in, and they're a team that won the offseason for me. And yeah, I still kind of thought they were going to be bad. Like, I didn't think that the acquisitions that they made were going to be good enough to be playoff competitive-wise. I just thought it was going to be close to 500, maybe. So this year went extraordinarily well. They have an MVP-type level player in Bobby Witt. Not type player. He is MVP level, without a doubt. Would have won if he was in the National League, I think. The bullpen is a huge strength. One thing that isn't a strength, though, is their farm system. They don't have a ton of guys that I really like as long-term, whether starters or even, you know, position player starters as well, too. They just don't have a ton of guys in there, in my opinion. And my concern with this team as well is that maybe the window is a lot shorter than what it could be because of that short-term farm system just not being there. Seth Lugo, who is really good, is 34 right now, will be 35 by opening day next year. Michael Wacha is 33, and Salvador Perez is finally starting to get up there in age at 34 years old. I don't know. Is it going to be tough to ask for Salvi to do this again at 35? Is it going to be tough to ask, you know, two mid-30 starters to take on 200 innings again? I think they'll be fine with Reagans. I think they'll be fine with Witt and Pasquantino. But outside of, you know, those two guys in the lineup, there's not like this lineup is a crazy run-producing machine or anything like that. Like, it's not that great of a lineup once you go past five guys. I had Yuli Gurriel hitting fourth from. He's 40 years old. Like, he's not a good baseball player anymore. So I think kind of similar to what we talked about Detroit, you just got to find platoon-level guys that can help you win ball games. And it even means more for these two teams, because if you get them, that means your other team's not going to get them as well, too. So top of the wish list, continue to pull in free agents. They did a great job of that last year with the guys that they brought in, and I think they can do a really good job of it again this year as well, too. Last team on the grades and top of wish list item is the San Diego Padres, who lost to the Dodgers. Skyler, what do you have here?
Also a B+. Another team that almost had it figured out before, of course, running into the Dodgers again. And, you know, we mentioned wheeling and dealing. This is the team to watch out for, because they're the kings of the lateral move. You can't bring everyone back. Kim, Arias, Profar, many more may not be coming back. But you also need to replenish the farm every year. And it's another one of those situations where you're trying not to lose too much value, but you have to get younger. So, hey, you know, bite the bullet. And if it doesn't work, you can always flip a couple guys for Dylan Cease again, right? So lateral moves. Don't lose the foundation, but get a little younger outside of the cornerstones.
Yeah. And I think something with San Diego specifically that does need to be talked about before we get into their season grade is just how good their like scout team is and how good they are at drafting and using the international pool to their advantage. Because it seems like every year, the last 4 or 5 years, the Padres straight away their whole farm system in the offseason or at the deadline. And then you look again 6 months later, boom, top 10 farm system again. What they do in recycling prospects and getting the most out of their guys to be baseball ready. And we're seeing, you know, even the guys that they traded for Soto are now, you know, the mainstays of the Washington Nationals lineup. Like, they produce ball players. And I think that's one reason why teams are so willing to trade with the Padres one. And I think that's, you know, partially AJ Preller as well, just being, you know, so ready to trade at every single moment of the entire season. But getting into this season specifically, I give it a B+. 93-69 is a way better record than I expected going into the season. They also didn't have Luis Arraez, Dylan Cease, when we were doing our original preseason stuff. So it's a bit of a different roster. The only reason why this isn't an A or an A+, though, is that they lost to the Dodgers. And this whole narrative behind this team is that this team is not the little brother to the Dodgers. They are not going to be that team. And unfortunately, they were, especially in Game 4 and Game 5, where they just couldn't score any runs. But I think the good thing long-term is that they really did put themselves out there as a long-term contender. And that's because of the core that they have right now. Dylan Cease and Michael King are elite starters. Don't let anyone tell you different on that. They did lose Musgrave for next season as well, too, which sucks. But I think Darvish will still be around. And they're, you know, not going to be afraid to make moves as well, too. Arias, Tatis, Profar, Machado, Merrill, Kim, Bogarts feels like a really good core. If they find a way to keep around all those guys, I think I'd be surprised. But I still expect them to retain most of them, of course. And then the top of the wish list for me, I'm going to say add a DH. They added David Peralta this past year, and he kind of served as their DH. That's not the guy that I want. There's going to be bats out there, Santander specifically, who would be pretty cool, and I think would, again, would fit this lineup. Obviously, a 40-homer bat from that hits both sides of the plate is definitely going to be something that fits any lineup, but I think San Diego specifically could be pretty interesting. Overall, good season. But losing the Dodgers just sucks so bad for the Padres. Moving on to our QB tier list. We're going based off of this year, that is. So we're not going, you know, maybe Mahomes isn't going to be in the top tier because he hasn't had the greatest seasons. So don't freak out with that. We went based off of this tiermaker.com list. So there's a bunch of guys on here that haven't played. We kind of determined that they've played at least 2 games, that they're kind of eligible for this list. So for me, I didn't have DeVito, Drake May, who's only played 1 game, Sam Howell, Bailey Zappi, who I don't even see on a team. I'm not really too sure. Tua, I didn't put on Russell Wilson, Tyrod Taylor, Zach Wilson, Michael Penix, and J.J. McCarthy. And then there's a few guys in here as well, too, like Brissett and Gardner Minshew, who weren't on the list. But I guess we could get started with the D tier. How many people did you put in the D tier, Skyler, and kind of explain that tier to me?
Yeah, I have 4 guys in the D tier right now. I have this tier listed as start looking for a replacement. It's just not working out for whatever reason. This group is led by Deshaun Watson. I know why he's still playing, and it's not Stefanski's fault. And if they fire him, that'd be a great addition to the Jets offensive coaching staff, 100% as the head coach. But until then, it is hard to watch them. Next to him, I have the AOC/Minshew situation. Those guys were screwed from the start. It's hard to blame either of them. They've now lost their number one receiver. I'm sorry, of course. Next to him, Will Levis. I hate to do it, but it's another week where he, again, was unwatchable. It's really bad. He has Zach Wilson written all over him, unfortunately. Even though he has a cannon, he's just not smart enough. And that's exactly how Zach was. And it sucks when that happens. And then lastly, Bryce Young. I'm not saying I would trade him if I'm the GM, but if you're afraid to play him, you have to bring somebody else in. You can't waste that roster spot.
No. I also have 4 guys in the D tier, and I kind of determine this tier as a negative net. These guys are hurting your team more than they're helping your team. Starting off with Bryce Young, maybe again, you know, not his fault specifically, but he hasn't helped himself in the games that he's played. He looks rattled. He looks like he's a high school quarterback playing on an NFL field, and maybe that's because he has a size stature of one. But regardless, he's not playing as a number one draft pick. And he didn't get drafted number one because, like, he was a good quarterback is the thing I'm trying to say. I didn't really know how to word that there. But he was a good quarterback. Right now, he's not. And I think that's the biggest thing of why he's in the D tier. Deshaun Watson, I don't know if it's the money or something, but this guy's checked out. He doesn't care. He doesn't care to care. It's another thing as well, too. And you just can't have that guy as a quarterback of your football team. Unfortunately for the Browns, he's going to be the quarterback this year. He's going to be their quarterback next year, and he's going to be their quarterback the year after that, because he's guaranteed $45 million in each of those seasons. Will they cut him, find a way to get around it? I don't know. So I'm moving on from that. Next up is Will Levis. This one hurts because I liked Will Levis coming out of college. And again, maybe he doesn't have the greatest surrounding core around him, but it's better than some of these other teams, especially, you know, maybe the Chargers or the Broncos. He's just a turnover machine right now. And especially when you don't have the strong offensive output that you can't afford those turnovers, especially the turnovers that he's made that are just like inexcusable ones as well too. So he's in the D tier. And this last one that I have, this really pains me, is Anthony Richardson. And that's not because he's necessarily a bad player. I just think what he's done decision-making wise and how physical he plays, it hurts his team more than it helps. He had 6 interceptions in the games that he's played so far. I believe it's two picks in each game, which is terrible if you're a quarterback. The way that he's played so far in his career as well too kind of dictates that he's not going to be a guy that you can really rely on for 17 games. And I feel like at the quarterback position, you kind of need to rely on that aspect. He's a great playmaker, obviously a ridiculous talent. And I feel like if everything goes right, he could be one of the most unstoppable players in the league. But right now it's not. And he's got a lot of fixing to do before he gets to a different place than that. So he's in the D tier, although I think he could definitely, you know, be a guy who ends up in an A or an S tier in a couple of years from now. Mm-hmm. On to the C tier.
Yeah, in my C tier, I have 9 guys. It's the largest group. Just tells you how much average quarterback play there's been this season. And I'm going to call this one, I've got some questions for you. We'll start from the back here with Bo Nix, because he's just a rookie. There's not a lot of help out there other than Cortland Sutton. And his one touchdown got called back. So we'll keep an eye on him. I also have Richardson in the back end of this. I don't necessarily have them in order, but I tried to keep it a little organized. A lot of the same issues. He just doesn't seem to have the efficiency yet, which makes sense because he didn't in college either. You would think they would know that, but he's got time. Also, Matthew Stafford. Obviously, his 2 big receivers got hurt, but still, we see what happens when these guys get a little older. He's not going to play forever. You got to start eventually looking for a replacement. Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick. It's more so about the money with him, too, because you can't move on. It's probably a situation where they're going to fire their coach if they lose to New England in London, which sucks because I like Peterson, but Trevor Lawrence hasn't been playing well either. Daniel Jones is also in this group. Again, if you're paying a guy this much money and you could possibly get out of it, they're going to take it and run. Go look for something in the draft. Derek Carr, more so the injuries. Seems like this is every year since the big one that we don't need to get into, but he's never been the same. Justin Fields, again, it's a weird situation with him. I would not have sat him, especially against the Jets, who are not very good at stopping running quarterbacks. I mean, what are we doing in Pittsburgh? Again, it's more so about the play style with Fields, why there's some question marks. Other than that, it's been a pretty big steal for them, 4-2. Dak Prescott sneaks in here too. A lot of really bad decisions this year, but that's more so organizational. He doesn't have a lot of other options other than to chuck it deep when you're down big. And Jalen Hurts, he doesn't look the same either. I don't know what's up with him. He's got a lot of time, though, and a good team around him, especially if Nick Sirianni gets fired, like we've been rumored to eventually see if things get worse. There's going to be some questions about Jalen Hurts. All right, that's my giant category for you.
My C tier is not giant. I had 3 people in here. So you'll see in the A and B tier, maybe a bit bigger. But for the C tier, I just really didn't know. For various reasons, I started off with Daniel Jones. His supporting cast may not be the greatest. However, he has one like generational type guy on his offense and Malik Nabers. And what he's able to do is pretty ridiculous. And I think Darius Slayton and Wandale Robinson honestly aren't that bad either, but I'm really not too sure on my opinions on those guys. But yet the run game maybe wasn't that good with Singletary, but now it's starting to come around with Tyrone Tracy. I just don't know if Daniel Jones, is he a guy that I want to be paying $40 million? No. But is he the guy that I'm, you know, if I was paying him Gardner Minshew money or something like that, would I be upset if he's a starting quarterback on my team? Probably not. I don't think he's that bad. And I think his dual threat ability as well, too, adds to that as well. Next one is Bo Nix. Rookie quarterbacks are always weird to judge. And I think especially for Bo Nix, where he has Cortland Sutton and that's it on the offense, it could be even tougher to judge to how good he is. I think the playmaking of Bo Nix has kind of been something that surprised me, especially in his game against the Raiders. But I really don't know. And it's not like the Broncos have been winning a ton of games for me to put them, you know, higher than, you know, C or something like that. And the last guy is Aiden O'Connell. Played in two games. I really don't know. I like Aiden O'Connell as a player. I just don't think he's a great playmaker. And now, obviously, he doesn't have the crazy supporting cast either, as well, too, that he maybe had last year of more. But still got Brock Bowers and Jacoby Myers, so there is that. So definitely could be a guy that could be in the D tier. I just put him in the C for now. On to the B tier.
In my B tier, I have seven quarterbacks, and you're going to really understand that I'm not talking about the guy here, and you'll understand that immediately because this group is – they throw lasers when they're called upon, and we're going to start off with Joe Flacco. No, Joe Flacco is not better than Jalen Hurts and Dak Prescott. I'm sticking to the category for this one because the Colts should be an absolute mess. Flacco's kept them afloat. The numbers are going to be a little deflated in that system, I feel like, compared to like some of the Jets and Browns numbers he was putting up. He's not going for 400 anymore, but still good for him. Right next to him, we have Aaron Rodgers. Obviously lost a lot of the juice, but I think we saw last night he still got it inside of him. He's got the want to be out there, which is a lot different than some of the guys in the tier below. Very similar with Kirk Cousins. He's had a lot of injury issues, but it seems like he's locked in again. He had that 500 week recently. Good for him. Geno Smith, really confusing situation in Seattle. It seemed like everyone other than Geno Smith let him down against San Francisco, but hey, he's still leading the league in passing yards. You got to love that. Very, very similar note here with Sam Darnold. Defense helped him out in the last game, but other than that, he's had to step up big time too. He's thrown some absolute lasers. A lot of the guys counted him out. Kind of the upper echelon of this tier. Last two guys, we have Justin Herbert, who hasn't really been allowed to throw that much this year with Harbaugh, and Jared Goff, who is kind of doing the opposite. He's been completely efficient. He already has a perfect game this season, 18 for 18, and another similar game against Dallas.
For B tier, for me, I have 10 guys in here. So it's a big tier, and I think there's a few different groupings that I can make in here. I'll start it off first with maybe you're just not performing as good as I expected with the weapons that you have provided. And I started off with Mahomes. Surprisingly, I put him in here, but with how he's been in turnover the football this year, it's just not the Mahomes that I'm used to. Obviously, you know, Mahomes isn't a B-tier quarterback. He's an S-tier quarterback. He's the best quarterback that we've seen. I don't want to say that over and over again, but I feel like I kind of have to when I put something like this. Just this year, he hasn't been that good. And everybody's kind of saying, no, he doesn't have that good of a supporting cast. It's better than last year. It's better than the year before that. It's the best it's been ever since Tyreek Hill left, and he's won two Super Bowls with it. And I know, you know, maybe they don't need the offense to be that good to be able to win games now at this point. But he specifically has not been the playmaker as to the extent that I've expected him to be. And maybe that's just bias. I don't know. But right now, that touchdown interception ratio isn't looking good. So he's at a B for me. Next guy in that same category of the weapons, but you're just not doing as much with them, is Jalen Hurts. MVP level player, of course, but just hasn't had that same vibe around him this year. And maybe it's the dual threat ability as well, too. But he's just not – I'm not seeing any oomph when I see Jalen Hurts go out there like I did in previous years. Another player in this category, I think, is Dak Prescott. Obviously, as perhaps one of the best, if not the best, wide receiver in the league right now, and CeeDee Lamb on his team. And I know the run game is non-existent. They have the least amount of rush yards per game. But Dak Prescott isn't helping out. What's going on? Geno Smith as well, too, is in this category. He's got a ton of weapons around him, in my opinion, whether that's Lockett, JSN, DK, Kenneth Walker. He's got guys on guys around that offense, and he just turned over the ball a little bit too much for me to put him in a category higher than B. He's had some great games, but maybe not high enough to be in the A tier, in my opinion. Next up, I would say is, how do I describe it? You just don't have shit right now. Matthew Stafford is here. Without Puka and without Kupp, he's throwing to Tyler Johnson, Jordan Whittington, and Colby Parkinson. Like, he just doesn't have a lot of guys to throw to. Stafford hasn't been bad specifically, but just not working out right now. The other guy I want to put in here is Justin Herbert. He necessarily hasn't been bad, and I think he's done everything the Chargers have asked of him so far. He's not turned over the ball. You don't have to make any crazy plays, but just keep the ball in our hands, and we're going to run the ball, and that's going to be our identity. That's something that Harbaugh has really identified with that team very well. But Herbert's play, obviously, is kind of suffering from that. The next case is, I know you have the ability to be a playmaker, but maybe you're just not doing it right now. And that's Trevor Lawrence. We've seen him have great moments in his career, but he's not doing it right now is the biggest thing. And the last few guys on this list are just their own guys. Derek Carr is the first one. I think he's played good enough to be in a B tier, not a C tier. Obviously getting hurt sucks, but this is a guy who's been healthy most of his career. Justin Fields is another guy. Doesn't have a ton of weapons either. And I think he's done a really good job this year. And again, Pittsburgh benching him after a win is a very questionable decision. Last guy I have in here, Joe Flacco. Lacing him up and chucking the football. That's all he's doing right now. It's awesome to see. I think, you know, if it wasn't Joe Flacco and say it was Drake May who came in and did this, you know, coming in week four and just chucking the hell out of football, he'd be in F here. But Joe Flacco's fun, and that's why he's going to be. I think that's all my 10 guys. So on to the A tier.
All right. In the A tier, I have 8 guys. This is the creative playmaker tier. We're going to start off with Jordan Love because I feel like he's lost a little bit of the creativity, and probably because of the injury and the horrible weather in the past couple games over there in Green Bay, but I'm sure he'll figure it out. Right next to him is Patrick Mahomes. It's a similar situation. They just don't really have it figured out right now on offense. Luckily, they have the best defense in the league, so the team is fine. He's just not playing very well right now. Also in this tier, the two young guys, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, you know, respectively, awesome this season, deserve to be up here. Kyler Murray, again, another hard team to track is Arizona because Marvin Harrison's hurt again already, and he was throwing to nobodies in McBride last game. I don't know what's going to happen next week. I'm afraid to pick them, that's for sure. But CJ Stroud is also here. 5-1. He's turned it up a notch. Like I said, I thought there was going to be a little bit of a sophomore slump. He's been completely fine. Baker Mayfield has unlocked a little bit of that Oklahoma dark magic because they've dropped 50 points in a game again. Pretty awesome to see that. And Brock Purdy, I think he's really had to change how he plays. He wasn't a creative playmaker before this year, but now I think he leads the group. He has done so much with his legs, and with all the injuries in San Francisco, they're going to be okay for now. And that's the end of the creative playmakers tier.
I have successful playmakers as this category here. I also have 10 guys in this as well too. So it's going to be a little bit, starting off with Jared Goff. This guy's always had the game manager notion around him. This year, kind of is a game manager, but he's throwing darts as well too. And what he's done for the Lions, especially these last few weeks, it's been really good to see. Next guy is Kirk Cousins. We know he can sling it. I didn't expect it to take the few weeks that it did with Atlanta. I think that kind of put me on shock there for a little bit. But what he's done the past few weeks as well, too, has been extraordinary. Jordan Love, we know this guy can sling it. He's been doing it this past couple of weeks as well, too. I know, like you said, the weather's been a little bit weird for them, so maybe took down his numbers of what they could have been, even though he did throw 4 touchdowns on Sunday. He's just, you know, a successful playmaker, in my opinion. Brock Purdy in here as well, too. obviously doesn't have CMC with him, but he's still got a lot of guys around him, more than most, and he's done good, in my opinion. The games that they've lost hasn't been because of him. Sam Darnold, crazy to put him here, but he is in this A-tier category for me. What he's done has not been not turning over the football a ton, and he's been making good deep throws where you are willing to take the risk with him, where before maybe you weren't willing to take the risk with him. Joe Burrow, I don't feel like I need to say much about that. Joe Burrow is just an elite quarterback. Baker Mayfield, what he's done this year, turning that Bucs offense from maybe a one-year wonder to a surefire thing week in, week out, has been pretty cool to see. Kyler Murray, I know, like you said, the supporting cast maybe isn't there. Put some respect on Michael Wilson's name, by the way. He caught a tud. But
he's
regardless,
like the only actual receiver left.
Yeah, they don't have a ton of guys for him to throw to, unfortunately, especially with Marvin Harrison potentially out now with a concussion. But he's still been really good. Caleb Williams as well, too, has been really good, especially his last few weeks, taking away his, you know, maybe week one, week two performances. He's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league, in my opinion. And the last guy is Aaron Rodgers. Maybe not the record of some of these other guys. I think he's the only guy in this list, except for maybe Burrow. Him and Burrow, I believe, are the only guys that have records under 500. Maybe Kyler as well, too. But Rodgers is still Rodgers. Maybe not MVP level, but he's still been good enough. And that's my A tier. So on to the S tier.
Yeah. The last tier, I have three guys up here. I have it named as elite. This could be put me on your back. This could be we're screwed without these guys, the saviors. It's right now these big three for me, all in the AFC: Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow. I included Burrow because he has one working wrist and it's not on his throwing hand. And he's still been able to make sure that they are not 0-6. Is that, 2-4 to 0-6, right? Yeah. And that's why. The other two, obviously, Josh Allen, Lamar should be the front runners for the MVP this season.
I have four guys in my S tier category, and this is MVP candidates, is what I titled it. The first off, I'll start from the back here. I'll start with Jaden Daniels. What he's done to Washington and the weapons that he has around him is ridiculous. We talked about this earlier, how he's kind of gotten more credit than Caleb Williams. And I think he does deserve that as of right now. He's been really, really good. And I think it's pretty clear to say what he's working with in Washington is what is less, significantly less than what Caleb Williams is working with in Chicago. Next up, C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud. That's all I have to say there. He's pretty ridiculous. Josh Allen is the next one. This guy has no interceptions. Josh Allen has no interceptions.
And he just played
week
the Jets.
Six. Week six of the NFL season. Not something I thought I would say. He's been really good at holding on to the football. And that's just an unlike Josh Allen thing to do. So he's been really damn good. Last guy is Lamar Jackson. He was my MVP pick a week ago. Still is. The reigning, defending MVP is going to be at the top of the list for me. So that's my S tier. We got through this. Now on to Hoosier 12. And it did not take 45 minutes. It took an hour and a minute, unfortunately. So a bit longer. But Skyler, who are your conference champions, your 1-4 in the seeding for the SEC, ACC, not the Pac-12, Big 12 and the Big 10?
And the Mountain West?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we'll start it off with number one. That's, no matter what, is probably going to be the winner of the SEC. I have Texas. They're hosting Georgia on Saturday. So as the favorites, if they are able to pull this one off, that makes everything just a little bit easier to get that first round bye. After that, we got Oregon, winners of the Big Ten. I didn't think they'd beat Ohio State, but now their toughest game is at Michigan. So I'm probably going to take Oregon over Penn State in that situation. Shout out the Ducks. Massive win. That changed the whole outlook on the season after a weird start. Number three is the first oddball that I have for you. It's Clemson. Clemson, the ACC winners, in my opinion. They have one loss to Georgia, but I do think they're a better overall team than Miami. It's just, how much can Cam Ward do to bring them back? And when they play them in the ACC championship game, that's going to be an awesome game. And number four, the last spot, I'm going to give it to BYU for the Big 12. It's a more impressive resume than Iowa State because they crushed Kansas State a couple weeks ago. And I think a perfect season from BYU would get them in, but we all know the Big 12 is wacky and they usually beat each other up right before it's time for the bowl games. Excuse me.
Yeah. My top four teams starting off with Texas. They play Georgia this week, so that's going to be really fun. I think they'll be just fine in that. Texas is my number one team. They win the SEC, of course. Winner of the Big 12, Big 10, sorry, is going to be Oregon. I didn't think they'd beat Ohio State. Just like you said, they ended up doing it. 1-point victory doesn't matter. Having that zero in your loss column means a ton right now. Obviously, you're going to have to win the championship game. I don't know exactly how the divisions work exactly in there, so I'm not sure if they'll have to play them again. But maybe it's Penn State or whoever. Regardless, it's going to be a big game. That you're going to have to win probably because it'll probably come down. I mean, it's obviously come down to that. Next one is Clemson. I kind of hate that you had the same pick as me here, that they're better than Miami, because Clemson is kind of the underdog pick right now, I'd say maybe. They feel like the better team. Miami's had some close victories recently and, you know, kind of had to escape a loss from the jaws of life a couple of times in the past few games. Clemson's just been rolling through teams ever since they lost to Georgia in week one. And then number four, I'm sticking with BYU. I had them the last time that we did this. I'm happy that you picked them as well now, too. Welcome to, I want to say the dark side. Maybe it's the bright side on this side. Your next seven, though, Skyler, who'd you choose here, 5 through 11?
We'll start it off with Georgia. I think at the end of the day, the runner-up of the SEC should get this top spot here, no matter if it's two, three, probably not four losses, but two or three losses from Georgia, I'd be okay with. After that, we have Ohio State from the Big Ten. We know it's another team that is going to be in here. They just basically got to beat Michigan, and then after that, we'll see. Miami at seven. This is after projecting a loss to Clemson, of course. They would bump down a couple spots, and if you remember the MIME 25, I sent you last week, I did bump Clemson way up because, yeah, they've been scoring like 47 points a game. At the eight spot, I have Penn State. I don't think that they're going to lose to anyone unexpectedly. And again, like their toughest game would possibly be in the championship game against Oregon. And even with one loss, they're going to get in. They're getting in. Number nine, I have Alabama. Just got to win that Iron Bowl. And luckily for them, they got the nice side of the SEC schedule this season. So losing to Vanderbilt doesn't destroy the season. At number 10, I have Notre Dame. It only gets easier from here, other than Army, right? I've had them in for a couple of times now on this list. At 11 is the one, it's not even a shocker really, but I have Texas A&M, another SEC school getting in. I have more faith in them than I have an LSU or Iowa State or Arizona State to run the table, because I know LSU is technically in the spot right now. And I love Garrett Nussmeier. I accidentally called him Grant on the podcast last week, so I'm sorry. I just don't think they're a playoff team, so I'm sorry. And of course, the last spot, I have to go with Boise State. I don't see him losing in the regular season. And that, again, of course, they lost to Oregon. So that sucks for Army and Navy, because one of them's going to lose to Notre Dame, probably both. But, hey, more people get to watch Ansha Jeanty in this situation. So you're welcome.
My number five seed I have right now is going to be Ohio State. I do think that team is probably going to be the second-best team in the Big Ten once it's all said and done. Alabama is my sixth seed. Kind of scary. In the past couple of games, of course, obviously they lost to Vandy, and then South Carolina was closer than what it should have been. I do think Kalen DeBoer will fix that, though, and by the time we get to seeding, they'll be just fine. Georgia, I do have below Alabama because they lost to Alabama. I think Georgia probably loses to Texas. I don't see him losing a third game. I'm not really too sure. We'll figure that out as it goes. But still a seven seed. Penn State, number eight. They're undefeated right now, but I think everybody kind of knows that they're walking on eggshells with that undefeated season and could kind of change at any given moment. I know they've looked dominant at times, and they've had some good wins, but it's just like, it's just the eye test they don't pass, so, mm-hmm. which is really tough to put them high on the list. Miami is my number 9 team and the only other ACC team I have on this list. I think if you, they should be undefeated going into that game against Clemson in the ACC championship, if I'm remembering correctly in my mind. And if they lose that, one lost team from the ACC is going to get in. LSU is my 10 seed. I do have them getting in. I think they've been one of the best teams in the SEC the past, you know, 4 or 5 weeks now at this point. Winning in overtime, Kyron Lacy touchdown to win it was pretty damn cool to see. So they are my 10 seed. And then the 11 seed I have as Tennessee. They just sneak in. I think there's a couple teams that you can make a case for, but I think Tennessee is a team that people would want, or the committee would want to see as their number 11. So I think they're going to be more preferential to them. My 12 seed, the same team I've had the last few times that we've done this, is going to be Army. And I'm not actively rooting against Boise State, but I'm definitely rooting for Army. Bryson Daly has been a guy that I've talked about as a Heisman candidate the last 4 weeks. He had another 4 rushing touchdowns this past week and another 1 through the air as well, too. I believe that's 20 touchdowns now that he has on the season. He's been ridiculous and is leading this Army team that I hope beats Notre Dame in the near future, because I need it. I need it so bad.
That'd be sick.
As someone who's rebuilt Army in college football 25, I need this. Moving on to our weekend preview, Skyler. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got the schedule all laid out for you, Kyle, so you don't got to worry about it. 9 a.m. Saturday morning, we got 2 games with a lot on the line to kick it off. That's number 6 Miami at Louisville. And the Cardinals were ranked earlier in the season. Also at the same time, 5-1 Nebraska at number 16 undefeated Indiana. They're looking to stay perfect. Them being in the Big Ten could possibly have them jump frog that Penn State team we were just talking about if they're both 11-1 or something like that, which would be weird, don't get me wrong, but you got to do the blind resume check, right? At 12:30, it's a couple of ranked v ranked matchups. We got number 7 Alabama at number 11 Tennessee. Alabama really needs that some sort of confidence from this one, because Tennessee didn't look very good last week. And still somehow ranked number 24 Michigan is playing at number 22 Illinois. I think I got to go with the Illini in that one. They just scored 50 points last week, and I don't think Michigan can do that. Sorry, Alex. At 4:30, it's the game of the week. We've talked about it. It's number 5 Georgia at number 1 Texas. I can't wait to watch Quinn Ewers battle it out against Carson Beck, guys that are really playing for a lot right now, a shot at a possible first round bye in the playoff, NFL draft implications. So that'll be great. And for us West Coasters, at 7 p.m. Pacific, we get 5-1 UNLV at 4-2 Oregon State. Hopefully it's another one of those fun future Pac-12 after dark shootouts. And all right, I have no Heisman watch this week, and that's because I did something crazy, Kyle. It's another mock draft. We're going to go through 11 picks because the Raiders pick 11th in this situation. It's the current order, and I got your back. Let's just get into it. It's kind of hard to explain. Number 1 right now is the Patriots. Their 2 biggest needs are corner and receiver. So I had to give him Travis Hunter because he does both, right? It just all depends on what teams are in the top 5 for Travis Hunter. I think it's such an odd situation, but he's obviously a great talent. Number 2 is the Cleveland Browns, and you're going to hate me, but we've talked about it before. Quarterbacks go early. I have Shedeur Sanders to Cleveland. Like you said, he's one of the only guys that could handle a really messy situation from this class, and it doesn't get much messier than Cleveland's right now. So maybe they have him in the waiting. Don't worry, we'll get to you guys in a jiffy here, Kyle. Don't you worry. Number 3, yeah, you like that one? if you can't tell, I'm going off script.
Okay.
Number 3, Jacksonville Jaguars. They need everything, really, but I'm going to give them the tackle from LSU, left tackle Will Campbell. He's been solid. He's not at the Joe Alt level, but tackles go early. That's how it goes. You need to protect Trevor Lawrence if you're paying him that much. Number 4, the Carolina Panthers. let's shake things up with Cam Ward, quarterback from Miami. I think Dave Canales may want to go after his guy, even if it means cutting the number one overall player or trading him for way less than he's valued, which is unfortunate. The LA Rams, surprisingly fifth right now, and they luck out from all the chaos. They're rushing Will Johnson, Michigan corner, up to the stand. One of their biggest needs right now is corner, and the offense usually fixes itself with Sean McVay, so maybe don't take a pick that high. One that really hurts my feelings, Tennessee Titans, Teteroa McMillan. We've talked about it. Maybe they should move on from Will Levis. This probably isn't the draft class to do it, though. So get them a 6'5", massive target to help them out, make things much easier.
What if they got Arch next year?
That'd be cool.
I could see it. Tennessee? Dude. It's written in the stars.
If only it was the Saints, though, right?
Yeah, for real.
But yeah, they both obviously have massive connections there. At the seventh spot in the mock draft, it's the New York Jets. And I did do this before the Davante Adams trade. I think still, when you look at the contract, they should probably take a receiver. So I have Luther Burden here. He's made a lot of really bad quarterbacks look great at Missouri. So I'm sure he'll get things moving. I know he hasn't had the same season this year, but it's a little different when you show up to the combine and you're a freak. At number eight, uncharacteristically, Cincinnati Bengals are here. It seems like this is another team that can't stop the run for their life. So I have Mason Graham, big D tackle for Michigan. More of a hybrid than really the nose tackle, but he's got the production Hutchinson had. So we have him here. At number nine, the New Orleans Saints. I really didn't know what to do here, but they took O-line last year. So let's go D-line this year. Nick Scorton, Texas A&M, he's been a freak off the edge. At number 10, it's the Arizona Cardinals. I have them taking a guy who you may not have heard a lot about yet. He's not up in the first round on mock drafts. That's going to be Cam Williams, the new left tackle for Texas. No one thought he was going to make the team. He's a guy, junior, who didn't play a lot. Earns the left tackle spot. Dominates. He's going to be one of those Senior Bowl guys who, like J.C. Latham, I don't know, maybe pick 40. All of a sudden, he's going seven. So there you go. And here's the Raiders, what we've all been waiting for. In reality, they're making a move for a quarterback. But if you're sitting at 11, they're not going to be too upset with Quinn Ewers. This is a guy who probably would be starting for the Raiders right now if he left school early. That's why I'm okay taking him here at 11. I hope I didn't upset you too much with this mock draft.
Yeah, I just have a feeling it's going to be Cam Ward or Shadur.
Well, I mean, you guys are in tank mode. You won't be picking 11th.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That's my idea. But last year, again, as well, too, I thought it was for sure we're drafting a QB, and then it didn't happen. So you really don't know these things, unfortunately. That's the thing that sucks, especially as a Raider fan. And I was thinking about this. This is a shower thought I had earlier today about the irreparable damage that Jamarcus Russell put on the Davis family. And how that has impacted maybe the way that we've looked at and drafted quarterbacks ever since that moment. We've only drafted one quarterback in the first two rounds of a draft since then, and that was Derek Carr. Obviously, worked out pretty damn well for Derek Carr. He was our quarterback for 10 years. But all these opportunities that we've had to draft a guy, we haven't done it. Mm-hmm. We haven't done it. And I think the comments that Mark Davis made today maybe indicates that things are going in a different direction for that, with how he said Tom Brady can't be our current quarterback, but he can maybe help us determine who's our next guy is. And that's pretty cool. I will say that hopefully Tom Brady's as good of a owner as he is a player. I don't know. He owned the Buffalo Bills for 22 years, so maybe I could just ask a Bills fan, but regardless, that's an unnecessary shot, but it's just been a rough day as a Raider fan, man. I needed something to happen, but yeah, I want a QB really bad.
Well, all right.
Anyways,
that's what I got for you.
Moving on to our layups and bold predictions before we get on out of here with this longer episode. Bad week for me last week. Good week for Skyler. I had the Seahawks +3.5 on Thursday Night Football. That did not happen. Skyler had Tampa Bay -3.5 versus New Orleans on Sunday. That did happen, of course, in their big victory. I want to say it was 51-27 final score there.
Yes,
this
sir.
Week I have Atlanta minus -3. They play Seattle. Atlanta's been hot. I've been a big believer of this team, so I say they get the victory in this one.
Three or more, of course. Before I say mine, I have to mention, I had so many of my friends text me that they, oh, dude, I have Tampa Bay minus 9.5. Wish me good luck. If you listened to me on Tuesday, you wouldn't even have to stress at all with the 3.5. But anyways, I got a similar strategy here with my layup. I have the Patriots plus 5.5 in London against Jacksonville. I referenced it earlier. I don't think Doug Peterson's coming back to the States as the head coach. Or maybe the very next day, like what happened with the Jets. But
is he coming back to the States at all? Do they just leave him in England?
Hey, that's what Kingsbury did, right? He went out to the Philippines, and then a year later, he was, working with Jaden Daniels. So,
and he was also almost hired as our offensive coordinator as well, too.
And yeah, I think I'm going to pick the Patriots to win this one. Surprisingly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked about that. Bold prediction last week, I had the Giants on Sunday Night Football plus 145. That did not happen. Skyler and his bold prediction did hit. He had number 13 LSU over number 9 Ole Miss. They do get a victory in overtime. A crazy game there, of course. This week, I'm taking Houston money line plus 130. I liked your pick, and I was thinking about doing the spread for that pick in my layup. I decided not to do that, and I do think the Texans beat the Packers this week. I know it's going to be, that Lambeau vibe can always be tough to kind of go into, and maybe the weather's not going to be good either, but I think Houston and their offense is good enough to escape with a victory, and their defense as well, so pretty underrated group there.
Yeah, I like your pick too. I think in an alternate reality, that could be a great Super Bowl matchup, but unfortunately, we have a couple of kings standing in the way right now.
Like King Henry?
Exactly. He's one of the kings for sure. I'm going to have the Detroit Lions over the undefeated Minnesota Vikings. It's only plus 115, but it's better odds than you get with picking Kansas City. So I decided to go with this one. The Lions need some sort of bounce back. They already have the energy. That's not the problem, but it's the Hutchinson injury. How do they react? They extend a Lee McNeil and get the vibes back up in the building.
That's going to do it, though, for episode 214. Obviously, been a bit of a long one here. I think we're approaching 80 minutes now at this point. But a fun one, a necessary one. We'll talk more next week about a lot of stuff in the NFL, in the league championship series, which I think should be done by then. So maybe we're looking at the World Series. I'm not too sure.
MVP, parting note, Bryce Harper.
Yeah, true. Parting notes, is Sean Manaea the new Chris Sale?
I like them apples.
Yeah.
I
don't know.
He looked pretty good yesterday.
He did. Oh, and against Phillies.
I mean, we got it out of our system, I think. This was a longer episode than I thought we'd go for, but we had a lot to talk about, man. You know, we're coming off of one of those episodes with the power rankings too, so we needed to rant a little bit, I think, especially with this big trade with both of our teams. Madness. Can we beat Russell Wilson, please, and end the losing streak? Jesus.
Let's keep losing.
All right. We'll be back next Tuesday. Go Jets.
Go Rams.